The Reality Exploit Roundtable has uncovered disturbing evidence of statist belief systems in nearly 100% of humans.
Hello and welcome to Reality Exploit Roundtable Episode Uno. Today we'll be putting the agorist spin on European banking shenanigans, gang-on-gang violence in Mexico, slave-on-slave violence in the United States, and clown-on-customer violence in Paris. My name is Voodoo, and I'll be your host and moderator for this first episode of the Reality Exploit Roundtable. We've got a rock star panel with us, so the leading lights in the field of people who like to hear themselves talk, so let's get right to them. From his temporary autonomous zone deep in the heart of a hollowed-out European volcano, the co-author of the Second Realm book on strategy, tribe incubator, and meditation instructor, Smuggler.
Hey, hey.
Taking a break from his usual studies of anarcho-capitalism, mesh nets, reputation networks, and the economy of EVE Online, Plato's come out of his cave to join us.
Good afternoon or evening.
Pulling himself away from katana-filled dreams of the flotsam of the world drifting down the left coast of the United States, Hero.
Here.
And one step away from being the world kingpin of knockoff jewelry, Wise Guy.
What's up?
Welcome, all of you. Please return your seatbacks and tray tables to their full upright position, and let's get started. Topic number one. According to Wired's Threat Level blog, mobile phone surveillance by police target millions of Americans annually. Quote, mobile carriers responded to a staggering 1.3 million law enforcement requests last year for subscriber information, including text messages and phone location data. The company said they were working around the clock and charging millions in fees to keep up with ever-growing demand. The number of Americans affected each year by the growing use of mobile phone data by law enforcement could reach into the tens of millions, as a single request could ensnare dozens or even hundreds of people. Law enforcement has been asking for so-called cell tower dumps, in which carriers disclose all phone numbers that connected to a given tower during a certain period of time. Unquote. Here's Congressman Ed Markey of Massachusetts warning of some sort of natural disaster.
We have to make sure that the protections are built in up front rather than having a privacy tsunami hit our country where people now realize that they have no privacy.
A tsunami. Hey, Plato, I think I'm simple here. I figured that I was paying my phone company to keep my private conversations private. Do these companies care about privacy or just privacy outside of the Western world?
Well, those phone companies certainly do care, and they're not going to give your information to just anyone. The guy you heard in the clip is Congressman Ed Markey, and he wrote a bunch of letters with his Congressional Bipartisan Privacy Caucus asking all these cell carriers just what the government is asking them and what they're giving back. And like you said, 1.3 million responses of cell carriers giving data to the government. But every one of these letters in the replies, they were very careful to specify that they don't just comply willy-nilly. They only comply when they have to. And there's a whole lot of laws that says the government is able to, you know, fine these guys or punish them in other ways if they don't comply. So the answer is they are protecting your privacy to the extent the law requires.
To the extent the law requires. Wise Guy, what kind of shifts are we going to need to see in you know, the thinking and the technology so that we can recapture privacy to the extent that the law allows?
Well, I don't think that you're going to see the government rein in national security letters or any of the abilities of government and police agencies to wire us and monitor us constantly. I think the only likely possibility is people moving to non-phone system communications, that is, not using the regular phone system audio, but either some kind of encrypted voice over IP, or perhaps even ad hoc networks that provide cellular coverage.
Interesting. Hey, Smuggler, like Plato was saying, these U.S. telecom companies are making a big show of, hey, we're protecting privacy. We want clarification on these regulations. When are we required to comply? What are European telecom companies doing?
I think that neither European nor U.S. carriers really care about your privacy. They're in the business of making messages travel from A to B, and sometimes there's additional C in there, which is the wiretapping government or anything else. I mean, there have been cases in Europe and also in the US where phone companies did their own private intelligence shit. So actually, I don't think there's any privacy they protect right now.
Yeah. Hiro, to become a telecom player, you've got to make massive investments in infrastructure. And not just anybody can do that. I think these companies are in a prime position. Aren't they in a position where they can just stand up and say no and there would be nothing that would happen to them?
No, not absolutely not at all. They're not interested in fighting any type of battles. They're interested in complying with what they have to do. And that affects their bottom line. So if there is anything that appears them protecting customer privacy, it's usually just a facade for covering, for not wanting to invest and money into actually fulfilling these requirements that the government has. You can see the infrastructure that they have, the number of employees that they have, and the amount of money it takes to comply with the government in these areas. So I don't think that they can stand up and just say no, because their shareholders don't care about that at all.
They are giving us clear information, though. We got a lot of data back in these letters. And like you said, they're employing a lot of people. I thought it was entertaining that AT&T employs more than 100 full-time staffers. Sprint employs about 200 people. Jimmy Wales says we employs about 100 people. So they are at least, you know, doing something here, telling us about it. The national security letters that Wise Guy mentioned, on the other hand, we have no idea how many of those there are. They don't tell us about those.
At the same time that they may release this information, it may be interesting, but AT&T, at the very time that they're releasing this, and if anyone thinks that they have any concern of privacy, right now they have... They're allowing open taps into their fiber network with the NSA. We're not even talking about getting permission and giving permission. They have open taps, and they've done everything they can with all of their lawyers to keep themselves from being sued for participating with these. They're getting an immunity for being involved with these wiretaps.
And one shouldn't forget that there's real money to be made. I mean, the government is paying the carriers for every single surveillance case. So essentially, they have a price list they give to the government. Kind of really expensive to do a tap or something like that.
The carriers point out that they're not getting close to as much money from the government as it actually costs them to run all these numbers.
Which is bullshit, in my opinion.
They should be paid for their good work. I mean, we should have some alternatives where we don't actually have to use the guys who are working with the government. But it seems like, you know, government's sticking its fingers in the markets once again.
I think one of the things one has to remember is that no government and no carrier will ever protect your privacy. You either go to people that are paid for that specifically, or even better, you're using technology to protect yourself. Privacy is nothing to be granted. Privacy is something you take yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay, my take on this is that law enforcement bureaucrats are just as lazy as any other bureaucrats. If these companies were putting up any sort of procedural hurdle at all, the requests would be going down, not up. But, you know, it's just an additional line of revenue for them from people who aren't even their subscribers. They're the taxpayers. Topic number two, the governor of Bank of England, Mervyn King, defended the Bank of England's actions over the LIBOR scandal in front of a British select panel of MPs, claiming we had no evidence of wrongdoing.
Despite the fact that there are serious commentators in the US questioning the viability of part of the London market, you appear still to be in denial that it was known that there was LIBOR rigging going on, the lowballing, when it's patently obvious to everyone that it was known. My question is, why are you still in denial over this? And wouldn't it help the situation if, in fact, the Bank of England, along with the FSA, recognised that lowballing had failed to be spotted because you had other priorities because of the economic crisis? That honesty might then give us some credibility in going forward and dealing with this crisis.
No is the short answer, and the slightly longer answer is that there is a world of difference between people saying they do not know how to submit when they're doing the LIBOR submissions because the market is dysfunctional, and no one knew what to make of the quotes that were being submitted. This was something which I discussed with this committee in November 2008. The world of difference between that situation and deliberate misrepresentation of the submissions with a view to a financial gain, either private or institutional. I didn't...
Hey, Smuggler, I guess here I'm supposed to be asking a question about LIBOR or banking or European banking, but what caught me in that clip was something King said. What the fuck is a dysfunctional market?
I think the answer to that differs from whom you're asking. LIBOR and how the LIBOR rate is really defined is dysfunctional to the root. It's not a price that is developed through really doing transactions, but it's more or less like educated guesses. And right now what we're seeing is coordinated educated guesses, which is what everybody is so pissed off over.
Wise guy, back in 2008, when we had this so-called credit crunch, LIBOR was the measurement that everybody was going to Capitol Hill and screaming about, saying they couldn't get money here. LIBOR proves it. But we could tell back then that there was LIBOR manipulation. How come it took 4 years for the media to actually recognize this?
Well, I think that Wall Street tends to keep its own console. And even things that happen privately within these high-level organizations, the financial services, are often kept out of the media. People don't want to go out because there's huge amounts of bonuses that are riding on basically making sure that they're successful and their organizations are successful. So even though with a wink and a nod when these people were over lunch about it, nothing got done. Even when the information leaked, Federal Reserve Bank and Timothy Geithner, who was then head of the New York Fed, went to the regulators in England and suggested that it was a major problem in LIBOR, he was basically shunned or ignored.
So Plato, in that clip, Mervyn King's basically saying, hey, regulatory bureaucracy failed to regulate my regulatory bureaucracy. So do we need a regulatory bureaucracy to regulate regulatory bureaucracies?
No, we need to have
that's way too much. You don't need anything that complicated. You need transparency that Bitcoin offers. Anybody can go look at the blockchain to see what happened to the money. And you might not know full information now, but down the road, you're going to have people using Bitcoin and keeping an eye on the blockchain so you can know who to trust and where the stolen money's going. And that fulfills like all the same tasks that regulators are supposed to be doing on their own, just as part of the currency.
You think that's right, Hero? You know, LIBOR and central banking, that all falls into the area where mere mundanes aren't supposed to know or ask about that, but it's got a huge impact on their day-to-day lives. Is Bitcoin or some other digital cash the way out of this?
I don't think so. I think that the financial organizations really are not going to adopt anything like Bitcoin because of the obvious challenge it has to the state. However, there's no reason that all of the transactions that are actually going on in these financial service organizations that would be a basis for computing something like LIBOR cannot be made public in real time so that all of the traders and anyone else who might want to analyze transaction data can see what's going on.
Well, of course, Bitcoin isn't going to, you know, cure the banks from cheating each other. They're just going to keep cheating each other until it all collapses and they all die. Or, you know, have to go and actually work for once in their life, which is going to be the really, really fucking entertaining part. Watching Hank Paulson try to, you know, work at a Hancom farmstead.
Yeah, what I see from one thing I see from the LIBOR is I think that the cry out for this fraud and everything, for one group of people, one effect is going to have is additional regulation. And like you said, do we need regulators? People are suggesting stuff for similar things like this all the way up to a United Nations like oversight board or World Bank type, you know, where we just add on additional layers. And these people are the people who believe in the system. And even when the system fails so bad, they continue to believe in it and think we need to do something else. The other part of this is similar to what the effect of much of the Ron Paul message was. which was had nothing to do with the political system itself, but had the effect on the people who were watching. And that is, so many people out there have been believed in the system, and now they see this fraud with LIBOR and the stuff with the central bank in the U.S., the Federal Reserve, and then they realize, wait a second. All of these games are rigged, and all of these games are fool's games unless you're up at the top. And then you start looking at alternatives. And that may be a time when you may stop investing in certain markets that are very popular and start investing in things that are on a Kickstarter or some of these other Bitcoin-related type projects. Or you may stop using...
Invest in drone tech.
Right. So you start looking at alternative systems. So I see that this LIBOR thing can have a positive effect on the information that's going out there for people who are learning something and then moving to an alternate system themselves. I don't know that has an effect on the world at large, but it can have effect on individuals and their groups in an agorist networked decentralized network society.
Okay, yeah, I do have to disagree with Plato and his transparency statement. And a little bit on Hero as well. When we're looking at many of those scandals or whatever coming out, frauds, in my opinion, that's not fraud. The whole definition is, let's make a guess. And the stupid people are those that trust the guesses that by definition are not real prices. So it's more or less like asking a Turkish used car dealer what he would pay for a car that some friend of you is going to sell, maybe. I mean, that's not a basis for a rational decision anywhere. So in my opinion, people have to grow up. And when people grow up, then stuff like, you know, the LIBOR and other things done by the banks simply become uninteresting for the majority. I mean, this is a game of stupid for the most part. And even something like a transparent Bitcoin. Bitcoin does not give us credit. I mean, you cannot go and borrow Bitcoin from the Bitcoin blockchain. So when you want to know how much a loan will cost, then you ask the person who gives the loan to you, and you don't depend on someone else's prices. I mean, that's basic economics. There's no price unless there's a deal.
Bitcoin isn't perfect, and it doesn't solve those problems. What I was thinking more is in the 2008 housing market problems, you have, you know, your grandfather putting money in his pension fund, and the pension fund is buying these, quote, AAA rated mortgage CDOs that are really shit, and they are trusting the market because that's the only information that's out there. And with Bitcoin, we're going to have to see markets evolve, and when you make a CDO, people are going to ask, okay, what's in it? Nothing? Well, I'm just going to hold on to my Bitcoins instead. And that'll be a viable option. So there's certainly a lot we got to do until then.
I think I have to disagree again. Even the transparency provided by Bitcoin doesn't help us in any way to say the risks are this or to say the prices should be that. I mean, people have to grow up that they cannot trust the market in a single instrument with all their money. I mean, please, you want to blame the banks for all that? I blame us all.
Well, I agree that we all share in some of this. However, there are institutional and structural problems in government with the regulators that make them incapable, or let's put it this way, unwilling to really regulate the industries that they're supposedly overseeing. Everyone knows that when people on these committees that are regulating financial services or defense, when they leave office at a point, almost all of them go into the businesses that they were regulating. And until that is not possible, it's a legal ban that Congress imposes on itself that members can never operate in the spheres that they regulated when they were in office. Nothing will change because there's too much incentive for these people to create this quid pro quo situation with the people they're regulating, and knowing that when they leave office, they're going to get these juicy jobs doing virtually nothing, and it's kind of payback time for them.
Yeah, okay. Good luck getting them to do that on their own dime. Hey, let's move on. Now, let's move on to topic number three. Google execs take to the Washington Post to say technology can be harnessed to fight the drug cartels in Mexico. Got a quote from Eric Schmidt and Jared Cohen. In Juarez, we saw fearful human beings, sources, who needed to get their information into the right hands. With our packet-switching mindset, we realize that there may be a technological workaround to the fear. Sources don't need to physically turn to corrupt authorities, distant journalists, or
diffuse nonprofits and rely on their hope that the possible benefit is worth the risk of exposing themselves. Technology can help intermediate this exchange, like servers passing packets on the internet. Sources don't need to pierce their anonymity. They don't need to trust a single person or institution. Why can't they simply throw encrypted packets into the network and let the tools move information to the right destinations? Unquote. Hero, after Calderon's reign of all of these very, very, very bad ideas and all these dead people or people dead in this drug war in Mexico, is there anything, technology or otherwise, that the people of Juarez and northern Mexico can count on to restore peace anytime soon?
No, there's the whole issue here. The whole issue with the violence in Mexico is directly related to the United States war on drugs and the price increases, and the whole system up there in the north part of Mexico is one that is driven by the demand of drug purchases in the United States and the war on it, causing high prices. And so there's this massive incentive, and no matter how many people you take out at the top, they keep rising up, they keep getting replaced. The only type of possible solution is one of to lower the violence would be one of legalization, and the suggestions that Eric Schmidt had. For me, this is the problem with him and Google. When all you have is a search engine, everything looks like a database. And that's his solution to this, was let's create a database. He's sitting here acting like he came up with some idea. He's saying, we could use packet switching. What is he talking about, packet switching technology? Like, we could use TCP/IP in order to send messages and give people anonymity. Why doesn't he say WikiLeaks? Because his idea of this system is, let's create a system like WikiLeaks where we give everyone anonymity, and as part of that anonymity, we give them a special government identification number so we can track their submissions and we can reward them. I mean, what kind of anonymity and system is that? It's laughable.
Idiots.
It's also scary.
Well, it's scary because
you can do all that stuff. You can do all that stuff without a government ID number.
So
it's called a shiki-jiki.
Yeah, back to, let me finalize on this, is that so his solution, he said the problem is that people, the sources are going and having to report to corrupt officials, and then they're getting associated with it and then killed, or their relatives killed. So his solution is to create a system to where the people register with a government ID and get an anonymous ID with these same corrupt officials. I mean, who has the database? The corrupt officials. So his solution is just to give the guys that you're supposed to be fighting, that you're fearful of, keys to the database. So I don't even, just watching his YouTube video and reading his article, it's disingenuous to me, and it has contradictions in it, and overall it's just completely disgusting, because Google can go right now and create, he could take, for the amount of money that he spent on that trip and all the people that came with him and him flying around to Afghanistan and all around the world trying to look at how technology could be used, the same amount of money, he could have put up a Kickstarter project where he said, whoever develops this is going to get the amount of money that I spent on my trips, and we're going to integrate it into Gmail. And he makes Gmail so it has PGP encryption inside of it. It's linked up with a Tor or I2P anonymous layer. It has a built-in Bitcoin wallet, and then you have all the solutions that you need for people being able to report private information or without fear of reprisal. So I think that it's completely laughable for him to be talking about another government database to be run by the corrupt people in the first place that you're supposed to be fearing.
That is Hero White, ladies and gentlemen, the owner of AgorasRadio.com.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, wise guy. Is Hero right, or is Schmidt trying to have it both ways, where he's talking about creating something like Tor, but taking government money for it and then not having to face the four horses of the infopocalypse?
Well, he's either savvy as a fox, or he's smarmy. You take this. Google has, you know, has the mantra of do no evil, but it's clear that cooperating with governments that themselves may be very corrupt is really doing evil. So it really is a ridiculous idea, as Hero said.
Smuggler, you know, here in the U.S., we hear about Octomom's Crotch and American Idol contest between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. What's the zeitgeist in Europe over the 50,000 people who have been killed under Calderon's watch in the last 6 years?
Well, people are sorry, but really don't care too much because it's not a big thing in the media. And in a way, it doesn't matter much for Europe because it's far away. It's, you know, like people dying in Africa, which is close. So there's no real opinion on the whole thing in Mexico. But I'd like to add to what Hira said. I think there is a technology that can help us with that, and that is Tor plus Bitcoin, and make that into Silk Road. Because Silk Road, if adapted on a real big scale, could so undermine the profit margins of those big bad cartels.
Well, an alternative might be for the drug lords in Mexico to move into the political domain and take over the government, and therefore there won't be fighting about the drug movements. They'll be controlling everything, and the United States will be faced with an antagonistic government on its borders. And that might be an interesting development for the war on drugs.
Okay, that already has happened. The government, the bankers, and the cartels are all one of the same. But the cartels and the government has not been able to maintain a monopoly on that force, and this started back in the 80s when you had the Colombia controlled the production, the distribution lines all the way from Colombia to the United States. When that cartel got crushed, that created a situation to where there was a business opportunity for many cartels. That's when the multiple cartels split up. Now the government in Mexico does have a preferred cartel, but the problem is that there is so much money involved in this business that there's so much money and so much business that that there is enough business for alternate cartels to pop up. And now the reason why it's gotten so worse since some of the economic crisis in the U.S. well, and around the world is for that particular reason. The profit margins are still massively high, and the economic situation for regular Joe Blows is much worse. So these guys, anybody who has friends and relatives and business people that they already know on the other side of the United States and on the southern part of the country in Mexico, you can start up your own mini cartel right now. So these other ones have joined up, and that's what most of the violence is in the northern part of Mexico. People talk about violent criminals killing all these people, but for the most part, this is gang on gang, cartel versus cartel, and government versus cartel wars. And then it's gotten really nasty where people are taking out other people's family members and the like. But for the most part, it all has to do with the being somehow being involved, or families being involved, and businesses being involved in an alliance, allegiance to the different cartels. Let me say real quick one thing, is that I love the smuggler's idea that he just brought up, because in all these systems, when we talk about LIBOR, we talked about the cell phone tracking in the United States, now we're talking about the drug wall. All three of these have one thing in common, and that these are very large, economy of scale, centralized type systems. So
exactly.
So if you can decentralize these systems somehow, and I don't mean I'm not talking about privatization, or I'm not talking about decentralizing the existing systems. I'm talking about the individuals at the bottom, not top down decentralization, but bottom up decentralization. If you can decentralize the telephone networks, if you decentralize the internet and this drug distribution system, once that becomes more of a PP thing, the larger cartels then fall up, and that brings me back to the whole part where one of the reasons why drug legalization will never happen as far as I'm concerned, in the United States and Mexico, and under the current situation, and even in the future, I don't see it happening too much either, is because of the amount of money that's involved. Mexican government wants that money coming down here. If you look at the amount of money that's being spent on drugs, and you look at how much is flowing into Mexico, where's that going? Is that going to some drug cartels, little private estates? No, no. That money's coming in, and it's being spread out all over the place. So if they legalize drugs, then they lose their profit margins, and they lose their networks. So decentralization at the bottom level with something like Silk Road with digital cash, wow, that could be something that really could, that system is an enemy of the current cartels.
Yeah, and there's money for everybody in there. Even Hillary Clinton actually said exactly what you said, Hero, is the drug war's not ending. There's too much money in it, so the government's going to protect that racket forever. Hey, before we move on to topic four, let me tell you, you can get Smuggler's Book, the Second Realm book on strategy. I love this book, at anarplex.net, anarplex.net. It's free, which has to bug Smuggler to no end, but you can flip him some coin on the IRC channel at anarplex.net. He's got a Bitcoin address up there for donations in the message of the day. We've got Plato working on a Node.js authentication server. I can't wait to see this thing. Check out his work at github.com/therealplato, all one word, the real Plato, Plato. Hero, you've always got a lot of interesting projects going on. He's the host of Cypherpunked, Coinbase, Agorist Social Club, and that's all on agoristradio.com, agoristradio.com. And Hero's going to host the Reality Exploit Roundtable, so we thank him for that. Speaking of the Agorist Social Club, upcoming episode features Wise Guy as the co-host and a very special guest, me. We talked microfab, 3D printing and computer machining. You don't want to miss that one. All right, let's move on to our last topic. Number four, Steve Mann, a professor at the University of Toronto, a pioneer in wearable computing, alleges that he was attacked at a Paris McDonald's for wearing augmented reality glasses. Now, what's interesting here is Mann doesn't mention a Royale with cheese, and I don't know how you go into a McDonald's in Paris and not order a Royale with cheese. But anyway, he says, quote, "A person within McDonald's physically assaulted me while I was in McDonald's eating my McDonald's ranch wrap that I had just purchased at this McDonald's. He angrily grabbed my eyeglass and tried to pull it off my head," and hold on to your stomachs here, "the eyeglass is permanently attached and does not come off my skull without special tools," unquote. Ouch. So apparently the eyeglass man wore violated a privacy policy of the particular McDonald's. Wise Guy, we're going to see this more in the future. We're going to have people augmenting or replacing parts of their bodies. Are we going to see more conflicts like this?
No doubt about it. This wasn't the first time that man suffered at the hands of others because of his wearable computing. In 2002, he had a 3-day ordeal at the St. John's International Airport in Newfoundland. I don't know if you're Canadian, you pronounce that way, in which he was ultimately strip searched and injured by security personnel. So he's not unfamiliar with targeted. But as more and more people become transhumanized, having their bodies augmented in some way, we're going to see some problems of social, pushback, things having to do with either privacy or people's physical security. And it's going to challenge the very nature and notion of what it is our bodies consist of under the law. So I see a lot of conflict coming to courts near us soon.
Plato, there's going to be privacy problems just like this with some of this wearable computing. Are there any mechanisms, and what are those mechanisms that would force the transhumanists to respect the privacy of others?
Oh, sorry about that, Microsoft. I thought you were talking about the others not respecting the transhumanist privacy, like grabbing this guy in the McDonald's. Well, if we're talking about the transhumanist side, the gargoyles and snow crash who go around collecting data on everything and selling it, let's see if Google open sources their Google glasses. If I can be sure that the hardware isn't, calling back to the NSA, and if I can put Linux on it and set up my own UI and do all that myself, then I'll trust it. If not, I'm going to wait for some open source hardware to do the same thing.
All right. Hero, the Huffington Post ran the story on man's assault. McDonald's, prior to this, wasn't returning his phone calls, but they finally responded saying, quote, several staff members involved have been interviewed individually and all independently and consistently expressed that their interaction with Dr. Mann was polite and did not involve a physical altercation. Our crew members and restaurant security staff have informed us that they did not damage any of Mr. Mann's personal possessions, unquote. Thing is, this isn't he said, she said. The guy's got pictures from his glasses showing that McDonald's statement is wrong. But that's going to be something we're going to be seeing in the courts in the future, isn't it? The evidence coming from these devices?
It's photoshopped. I can tell because of the reflections.
Really?
I think that the problem here with... with these people that accosted him or whatever, McDonald's is a private business, and they have these regulations. I don't think that these people who removed his device have something against cyborgs or humanists. One of the problems that Steve has is that he's walking around, and he has essentially to many people, he may as well walk into a private in a restaurant or institution or other business with a 1980s VCR video camera duct taped to the side of his head. They know that that's a camera. And in the places you can't go walking into everywhere with the camera, they're going to ask you to remove it. Now, that policy may be stupid or outdated or not. It may not be reciprocal where you're being recorded, but nonetheless. So these people, they wanted to remove this camera device that they saw. Now, in this situation, you have the sound reminds me of a lot of like the Free State Project, the guys who go smoking marijuana across the street from the police station, and they talk about how they got assaulted and everything. And it's like almost like, well, it's obvious. And I'm not calling him an idiot or that his situation, he should expect this to happen. But in many cases, he almost should expect this to happen. When you walk in anywhere with the video camera, you better be looking at security coming up to you and forcibly removing you from the place if they have to. So one of his problems right now may be packaging. Now, if this thing was like packaged in a different way, if he actually had an implant in his eye that was the mechanical device, then the situation would have been different. But I do see this being a future of problems, and if his device was actually implanted in it, he may have had better. I don't know. Back to your original question, I don't know how this these devices can be used to show evidence of what happened to you. But I see augmented reality is coming to us. Everything in the next year or two, we're going to start seeing people recording every single thing that's happening to them from their front, from their back, audio, video, GPS, all of that. And I think it's going to raise some very interesting questions in the future.
Well, Smuggler, what is the right response for a private property owner when a guest comes in and violates your policies?
Well, the first thing is you ask him friendly to leave or to switch off the device because you want him to come back without the device and spend money. But I really understand people not wanting to be filmed. I come from a city where every fucking dumbhead is running around with a cell phone taking pictures of everything. And I actually have to say, if someone sticks a camera into my face and I say no, and he still continues to do it, there might be some retaliation involved. So I think it's a thing where both sides have to learn. This is not a transhumanist question so much. It's first and foremost, in my opinion, a privacy and respect privacy and protect privacy question.
Yeah, well, I think you're all right. I think all of you are right that we're going to have to adjust our expectations. We are going to be filmed in places we're not used to. But B, folks who attach cameras to their skull are going to have to expect to have those ripped off by random strangers from time to time.
Well, at least wear a mask.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so those are things we're going to be hearing about a lot in the coming months, and it's great to get your guys' take, true agorists and techno experts. That's going to do it for Reality Exploit Roundtable Episode Uno, but not the conversation. You can join us in the Pound Agora IRC channel on the Enterplex.net
server to continue the conversation if you want. And we've got show notes and links to the topics we discussed in the show description. Thanks, Smuggler, Plato, Hero, and Wise Guy for joining me. Thank you for listening to the Reality Exploit Roundtable.